Oh, there we go. Sorry about that. Let's go ahead and get started. Tonight we're going to be covering conference call number 5, which is CMA pricing. Tonight we're going to go over some of the key things to keep in mind. And as a side note, if you want to take some notes, this is the type of call where I'm going to cover a lot of some numbers and some objective factors where you may want to adjust on your CMA. And so you may want to go ahead and take some notes on tonight's call. Again, we're going to talk generalities and not go into specifics. If you have a specific question about a listing that you're working on or a CMA that maybe needs some adjustments or another set of eyes, certainly you could do the CMA and then contact me so that I can help you and make sure you've got the right comparables. So we are going to take notes tonight, and I am going to cover the objective factors and the subject factors of your CMA. In rare cases, there are some properties that are great comparables that may have the same floor plan. They may be the same condition and in the same neighborhood. Maybe even has the same number of bedrooms and bathrooms. But some of the agents in our firm have not done a good job of taking that as a comparable. Sometimes they're going outside of the neighborhood or outside to find something that really isn't comparable because they don't know or have the knowledge of how to adjust that particular home. For example, if I had a home that was in the same neighborhood, say I had a 4-bedroom home, and I was looking for comparables that were 4-bedroom homes in another neighborhood, and my current neighborhood does not have any solds, not even any actives that are 4 bedrooms, they are all 3-bedroom, 2-baths. I wouldn't want to go outside of the neighborhood. I want to try to find or use the comparables in the neighborhood that has 3 bedrooms and adjust those 3 bedrooms to be comparable to the 4-bedroom I'm going to list. So there are some cases where a fast-moving market where you don't have a good solid understanding of some of the appraisal principles where you may make some mistakes. And so hopefully tonight's call, you'll get some ideas on how to look at the data maybe a little more closely so that you get the right comparables. Number one, when you're doing a CMA, is isolating the data and really identifying as close as you can get the right comparables. So when you look at the subjective factors, which cannot be measured directly, you're really going to be looking at the location, number one, and the neighborhood. If you can find solds, actives, pendings, that type of data within the location or the neighborhood, if you're dealing with a condo, stick with the same complex. Don't try to go outside the complex and negate the solds or the pendings in the condo complex that you're working in. You could be thousands of dollars off by doing so. There are different homeowner dues. There's different assessments. There's obviously different views in certain areas of those condominium complexes. So by going to a different neighborhood or a different location in that particular example, that's really going to skew your numbers. So keep it within the same complex. Consider your location and neighborhood first, and then consider the street or curb appeal. What I'm looking for is I don't want to compare a view property, for example, in West Seattle. I don't want to compare that to, say, a home or a property that's not with a view. That would not be good. I would want to compare the same street or curb appeal as my subject that has the view or has the similar amenities or the similar location. So be very cautious about your comparables in that regard. Sometimes when I see them on paper, when I'm looking at CMAs for agents as they want a second eye, I'm not the one that has driven by the neighborhood to compare, you know, whether this is on a really busy street or whether your subject has an incredible view. I mean, sometimes you can't tell from the photos. You know that when you're out showing people homes. The photos sometimes don't show the trueness of what you're dealing with. So as an agent, when you're selecting your comparables, be sure you're really comparing similar locations and similar curb appeal as one of the two most important things that you do as an agent, because I don't know because I have not visited the property or walked the block that you're working on. Then it comes down to some of the other factors to consider is the condition. Now, certainly if I'm comparing an owner-occupied property, say a husband and wife, they want to list their home, and they're relocating to Arizona before the winter, they're not going to want to have their home compared to, say, the foreclosure that's down the street that has the tall grass and that has the, you know, the front door that's bashed in and the windows that are broken. That would not be a good comparable to use. So instead, I would want to, even if I had to go out, that was the only comparable within a quarter mile, I may want to go out a half a mile from my location. So still keeping within the same vicinity, still keeping within the same neighborhood, but considering the curb appeal and also the interior and exterior condition. I want to consider that when I'm locating and finding my comparables. The other thing to consider when looking for your subjective factors is I want to look for the quality. Appraisers, if you talk to an appraiser, they don't look at the marketplace like we do. What they usually do is they categorize the quality of the properties. So they have, I can't remember, they have a numbering system that they even use. And they number it based on the quality. So when they're looking at comparables, just like you look at comparables, they're going to rate the comparables by the quality. So they'll have a luxury quality. They'll have a kind of a upper end category. They'll have a mid-range category number, and they will number this based on how they feel the condition or the quality would be of that particular comparable. And they select their comparables based off of that. So as an agent, you should consider that as well. So when you're selecting your comparables, certainly don't compare a foreclosure or short sale property that's really trash to something that's been owner-occupied and tenderly loved. You'll want to make sure that you consider that when you do your analysis. The other thing that appraisers will look to is the security or privacy. They will make adjustments. If, for example, something's on a busy road and a comparable in the same neighborhood is not on a busy road, they will oftentimes adjust that comparable to include it in their appraisal, and we can certainly do the same thing with our CMA. You can take a property that's in the same neighborhood that may be on a busy arterial and something that is not and make those adjustments. So we'll kind of go through some ideas on that. In fact, I'll probably give you an example to show you what that would be. There was a property in Auburn downtown. One was on where, busy arterial is one where people are driving that road quite frequently. It was an older home built in the 1900s. And then the other comparable that the appraiser that I used for my CMA was on a street that was not on a busy arterial, meaning a street where it wasn't traveled as much. When I looked, it was funny because I did my CMA and I did adjust. When I did my adjustment, I attributed that adjustment with mine because mine was on a busy arterial. I adjusted mine by a negative $4,500. Now, the appraiser looked at my analysis, and he only gave $3,500 for that busy arterial adjustment. So he looked at my condition and compared it to the condition of the location of the other one that was not on the busy arterial, and I basically covered myself by making sure I did $4,500. He did it by $3,500. So we were close, but that adjustment factor was important to consider when you're considering a busy street versus a non-busy street. So you can do some adjustments like that when it comes to security or privacy. Now if we kind of go into objective factors, and I'll come back to some objective factors as far as how much money to attribute to some of these objective factors. But once you've identified, okay, I know the property, the subject is such and such on a street, and then I use the MLS, I go to the MLS, and I usually search in a radius, I draw a map, and I locate within this vicinity. Sometimes I use the polygon to actually isolate the area. Sometimes I will use just, a quarter mile, a half mile, maybe go up to a mile. But if I go above a mile, it better be rural. It better be in Roy, or it might be in Eatonville, or maybe out in Edenclaw, or way out in Duval. There might be some areas that you can go out farther because of the property sizes or the type of properties that are out there. But for a generality of just trying to keep your CMA as tight as you possibly can get, where an appraiser could almost put a stamp of approval on it, you really want to start within a quarter mile and work your way out to find your comparables up to a mile, generally speaking. When you have to go outside of the mile and you're really concerned about your comparables at that point, that could be a simple phone call to me and saying, hey, Rochelle, I've got a situation. It's in this such and such a street in this such and such a city. Can I consider comparables outside the mile radius? Would that be acceptable to an appraiser? And sometimes it is, depending on the type of property. That has happened for me with some view homes, some waterfront homes, and also some homes that are very uniquely built. For example, there was a home that was built that was completely remodeled all the way to the studs. Well, there was a lot of comparables within the mile, but we had to go out into the two-mile radius in order to find something that was remodeled, like to the studs, in order to justify our price. So that can be done, but again, generally speaking, you want to keep it under a mile. Then you want to look at once you put in the criteria of, you know, where you want the location to be, and you kind of look at the options that you have, all of the comparables. Maybe you have 12, maybe you have 15, maybe you only have 4 or 5. Then if you have less, you may need to expand out. So go from quarter mile to half mile to 3/4, and then all the way up to a mile. But at some point, you want to try to isolate the objective factors, meaning the square footage. And you want to think about a range. So you want to think like a buyer's agent when you look at square footage. So when you look at square footage, you want to think, so for example, I have a home that's going to be going on the market that has, it's in Tacoma, it's an investment property that my family owns, and so it's going to go on the market this week. So I would need to go in and I need to analyze what's going on in that marketplace. So the number one thing I'm going to look for in the MLS is I'm going to look for anything that is within the certain radius, like we talked about, but also within a range of the square footage. So let's just say, I don't have it in front of me right now, but let's say that the square footage, it's a 1,000 square feet on the main level, and then there's a basement underneath that's also 1,000 square feet. So potentially it's 2,000 square feet. This is a good comparable because this has come up many times for agents, and they don't know how to deal with the comparables that they're seeing. So I take that address, I go to the MLS, and I look for anything that's active, pending, and I use all the pendings, or sold, or contingent. I even like to see the expired, and I like to see the canceled as well. And some of those are duplicates, I realize that. But I want to see what's going on in the last 180 days in those specific categories, in that particular radius or area or location, and I want to isolate the square footage. So the way I do that is I take the square footage and I think like a buyer's agent. And how a buyer's agent thinks is, you know, if I've got a client who's approved for a certain price point, what kind of square footage can they afford? And in this particular case, with 1,000 square feet, 2-bedroom, 1-bath, with a basement, that's going to be a starter home in that particular area. So I don't want to compare things that are really, really large. So, for example, if I found a 2,000 square foot property, you know, that was not in a basement, say it was a two-story home, not a rambler with a basement, I would be completely misleading my seller with that number because the square footage is not livable square footage. Basement square footage is different than livable square footage. And on top of that, I'm not comparing the same style that I need to when I'm comparing a rambler with a basement. So you want to really look at that. Don't compare two stories to ramblers. Don't compare split levels to tri-levels. There are common mistakes that are done by real estate agents every day in that regard, and it drives the appraisers crazy because they're the ones that get the angry phone calls from us, and they have to explain simple appraisal things, which is you can't compare, you know, you're trying to compare apples to apples. There's too many adjustments that have to be made anyways, and when you change the style code, and you're comparing some things like that, it doesn't make sense, and they can't use those comparables. So it might be better to go out in distance than to compare the wrong style code. So be careful on that. So back to my scenario where I have a 2-bedroom, 1-bath, 1,000 square foot rambler with a basement. I'm looking for something probably no larger than 1,500 square feet of livable square footage. Or looking for, and again, I'm only comparing ramblers with basements or ramblers without basements. I could probably make that call and do some adjustment for that basement that I have. So again, on the MLS, I'm going to do two different searches, one probably going 1,500 square feet or less, and that would include one stories and one story with basement, and then I'll do another search, same criteria, active, pending, sold, canceled, expired, and contingent, and I'm going to be looking at probably 2,000 square feet, but only 1,000 square feet of livable, you know, kind of trying to isolate that by doing 2,000 square feet, but only including basements. So I can see if I can find something that's similar to my similar to my subject. Okay, and then also I want to consider when I'm looking at my comparables, trying to select which comparables would be most like my subject, I also want to consider whether the comparables have a garage. Mine has a detached two-car, really huge garage, and that adds value. But it's hard to find something that has a detached two-car extended garage in the city of Tacoma. So in the starter level category. So I'm going to look for similar properties, but they may only have one car garage. And so that's okay. Or they may not have a garage. That's okay as well. But if I happen to find a comparable property that has a two car detached garage and it meets the criteria where it has a one story with a basement, I'm golden. That's a great comparable to include in my CMA. But you know what? It's not perfect. CMAs are not perfect. You most likely will have to go. And in my case, I had to go out to a mile in distance to find one. And then I also was very cognitive of the fact that I needed to find a comparable that maybe didn't have the two car, but had the one car detached or the one car attached. And then I'm going to adjust it. And I'll talk to you about that and how to adjust here in a minute. The other thing I'm looking for is the lot size or the acreage. The lot size or the acreage is really important. I have saved sellers thousands of dollars, taken apart listings that were poorly marketed by agents that really did a poor job for their sellers. I have taken over these listings in the past because of just poor CMAs, flat and simple. There was a property up in the Bothell area, I believe, and it was one of our agents. She's no longer with the company anymore. I won't give you her name. But she had listed a property, and I went up to talk with the seller. I asked them to provide me with the documentation that this agent gave them. And one of the things that was very glaring was she had done a CMA. She had gone to the MLS and did her CMA. And from all indications, you would think as a consumer, well, she did her job. You know, she provided the comparables. But when you look deeper at it, and I looked at two of the comparables, this was a home that was newer built in 2012, relatively new. It wasn't brand new, but it was not an old home by any means, but it was in a neighborhood, and it was on a 5,000 square foot lot. So very small lot. You know, there was not much yard. And she had compared this property in a marketplace that was very fierce, where very busy. This house had been on the market for a long time, and people are wondering why it hasn't sold in a marketplace that's very fierce. Sellers were very frustrated. They had me come up when this agent left the company and left the firm, and we talked about the pricing. Looked at the CMA and realized two very important comparables that should not have ever been used in the evaluation of the CMA. They were two properties that were on, one of them was on an acre, that was in the same location, same area, but definitely not in the neighborhood and definitely not something that should have been compared. And obviously, with an acre of land, that property was worth a lot more, and so her CMA was completely skewed. It was too high. Her price was too high because the acreage on the property was greater than what we had that we're dealing with. The other one was it was a 10,000 square foot lot, so it did skew the numbers again on that. So she hit the sellers with two inaccurate comparables that ultimately affected what they could obtain from their sales price. So what we did is we went ahead and I redid the CMA. I did not include those two comparables. I did adjust some of the comparables to make sense. I did not include the 10,000 square foot lot because it did increase the list price significantly, and we needed to get that price down to a price where buyers would be willing to offer. But that was a $50,000 mistake, you guys. That was a very big mistake that this agent made. She lost the client. She lost the ability to work for Best Choice Realty, and she did a very poor job at communicating this with the seller. So I actually had to get the price reduction from the sellers, $50,000, but in the end, the sellers were extremely satisfied because they had a professional that understood appraisal concepts. So be sure that you consider your lot size and acreage and try only to include, you know, in the one I'm working with, it's a good size lot. It's 9,000 square feet. I'm only going to consider 15,000 square feet or less on that. So I'm going to want to exclude properties in Tacoma that have, you know, huge lots or that have double lots. Those are not, that would not be comparable to my subject. And I can exclude those either when I do my search for on the MLS or as I'm doing my search criteria, I can minimize or and maximize how I want to adjust for the square footage. The age of the home, although it is important, you may want to, I'm dealing with an old Craftsman in Tacoma, you know, and it has been remodeled. So, you know, if there were other remodeled homes that were built in the 70s, for example, which there is, there's one that's just next door that was built in 1970. It was burned down and they rebuilt it in the 70s. If that house had a similar kind of interior feel and similar square footage as mine, I could include that. So for my situation, the year built is not as important. I may not want to include a new construction with mine because mine is not new construction. So consider the age of a home almost secondary when you look at your objective factors. Now to end the call, we'll talk really quickly about the common objective factors that you use to adjust. What you want to do, and I see people do this a lot the wrong way, is they're adjusting based on square footage incorrectly. When you compare square footage, so say I have a property that is 1,400 square feet with no basement, and that one sold in my same vicinity. Now, remember, mine was 1,000 square feet, so I have a 400 square foot difference. So meaning that that property that has 1,400 square feet of livable space on the main level, and they don't have a basement. So I take the 1,400 and I minus that from my 1,000 square feet. So the comparable has 400 square feet more than mine. And then you need to know what the dollars per square foot needs to be, the adjustment factor. And then you will add or subtract based on that subjective factor. So, for example, 400 square feet in Tacoma, it's about $25 to $30 a square foot. I'm going to take the $30. I'm going to err on the higher side for my seller. I'm going to do 30 times 400, and I'm going to need to minus from my from the comparable because my subject has less square footage. So if the subject property is, again, 1,000 square feet and the comparable was 1,400, I would take 400 times 30, and then what that number is, I would deduct that, minus that, from the comparable. So if it was 240 and it was the factor of, say, my math, I don't know my math, I don't have a calculator right here, but say it was like $9,000, I would take, if they sold for 240, my subject would need to be $9,000 less, so in essence, listed at 231, rather than 240 in order for me to get it done or get it sold. So that's how you do it based on square footage. You don't try to use the square footage and do some weird math. I've seen a lot of agents do some really weird math. Be sure you're comparing square footage correctly and making sure you're appropriately subtracting or adding. You don't want to do it to the subject. You want to do it to the comparables. That's the mistake I've seen people make as well. On garages, mine has a garage. It has a very big double car extended garage. I mean, it's like a workmanship for somebody that's going to do painting in cars and really love that kind of thing. So I want to make sure that the comparable did not have a garage at all. The garage can add anywhere from $5,000 to $15,000 as a factor. So let's say that comparable that was 240, you know, although it has more square footage on the main living area, I'm going to want to add to that comparable $15,000 because I have a two-car detached extended garage. So I'm going to go ahead and give that a adjustment factor $15,000. So you could see how the math is shaping up. You know, I'm back up to probably 241 or 242 now because of my garage situation. Now on the basement, I get this question asked a lot. When you're dealing with below grade square footage, I certainly cannot attribute $30 a square foot for below grade square footage. Most appraisers will only give $10 to $15 a square foot for below grade. So when I'm calculating how much square footage, 1,000 times $10 or $15 a square foot, you know, that doesn't get me as much as you would think, you know, when you add it. But that certainly is an addition so that I can add to that comparable property that does not have a basement. Mine does have a basement. So there is some value, but it's not the same type of value that we attribute to livable square footage. So make sure you consider that when you're doing some adjustments on your comparables. Kitchen upgrades, some people think, oh, I put all these new appliances in, I can get a lot of money for it. Well, that does help. Upgrade appliance will help you sell the property sometimes, but it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get more value. When you do a kitchen upgrade or adjust for a kitchen upgrade, you could adjust anywhere from $5,000 to $30,000 for a kitchen upgrade because cabinetry is expensive, and that's most of the time it's the heart of the home. So consider that $5,000 to $25,000 or $30,000 for a kitchen upgrade, and do not consider I bought all these brand new appliances. Well, if the other comparables have upgrade appliances, it's really not going to give you that much of a boost when you're comparing the subjects to the comparables. However, a kitchen upgrade where they put newer cabinets or they go all the way up to the top or they put some granite or some different types of material onto the countertops that are more suited for that type of property, that right there could give them $5,000 to $25,000 or $30,000 in the upgrade. Okay. Decks, appraisers are going to use an adjustment factor of $3,000 to $10,000, depending on the type of deck you put on. Trex is going to get you more. But a deck, just generally, if one property doesn't have a deck and the other one does, $3,000 right there. So that could be help you in getting more money for your seller. Patios are going to be anywhere from $1,000 to $5,000. So decks are more because there's obviously more wood and more time and structure involved, but patios, $1,000 to $5,000. Land, depending on whether this is subdividable or not, you're going to want to look at the zoning on that and the size and then make the adjustment based on that. I would rather see you find, if you're working with new construction or newer homes and developments, it would be nice to know from the seller, hey, did you pay for a lot premium? Did you have to pay more because of the lot size? Some of the builders actually had, you know, when you went to go buy the property, and say it was built in 2012, you'd have to pay sometimes $10,000, $20,000 because your lot was larger. It would be much better to use that factor, you know, on the other properties. Say the comparable was not on a premium lot, but then I took my that comparable and added the $10,000 or $20,000. That would be much better than trying to do some mathematical equation and confuse the seller on that. Better to find something that has the same square footage and lot than to have to do adjustments on land. On full baths or half baths, full bath is going to be $3,000 to $8,000. Half bath is going to be $1,500 to $4,000 on a half bath adjustment. So let's say I had a property that was three bedrooms, one bath, and then the comparable that I was looking at had a 3-bedroom, 1 3/4 bath. I could adjust that 3/4, by about. A full bath is about $8,000. I could probably, you know, adjust it by $6,000 or $7,000 on that. Again, there's not an exact science, but you can certainly adjust to make that comparable work for your CMA. Half bath, same thing, but just $1,500 to $4,000. Fireplaces, appraisers will give you $3,000 to $5,000 for a fireplace. And there's some great comparables that we found, and some agents just didn't use it. And I'm like, why did they use the fireplace or this house with the fireplace? Well, because mine didn't have a fireplace. Well, certainly use it and just adjust it based on the factor of $3,000 to $5,000, much like an appraiser. And then you can adjust for condition. You know, carpet, for example, is most commonly adjusted for condition. So say I price the home with everything. I have my 1,000 square foot home with the basement all ready to go, and I'm just like, my seller's like, I don't have the money. I just want to price it to sell. And they decide that, you know, the carpet's really old. Well, the carpet is not as expensive, you know, to put it in themselves, but let's say they don't have any cash. If I adjusted for condition, say $5,000, that will more than cover a buyer coming in this 1,000 square foot space to put some carpet in. So I could do it that way, or the seller could do the carpet, which is what the seller decided to do the carpet, which was only, I think, $1,500 for the carpeting in this location. And in the end, I am able to compare that to other properties that have similar conditions. But I might have to adjust because if something I know down the street sold for, you know, much less, I might need to adjust for condition. Condition, don't go crazy with condition, but $5,000 to $15,000 when you're looking at a CMA to adjust for condition is not a bad thing. And again, that would be carpet, paint, just overall, you know, wearability of the home. Mostly carpet and paint, though. Features that don't add value are going to be expensive light fixtures, upgraded appliances, landscaping. Sometimes your seller's like, oh, should I do all this landscaping? I wouldn't advise them to put a lot of time and money into the landscaping. Landscaping helps you sell the property. It doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get more money for the property. I know I hate to be the bearer of bad news sometimes because people have spent a lot of time, but if all the competition that you're comparing does have this upgraded landscaping and does have luxury touches, and again the quality of the property is much, you know, that you have to compare the qualities, then yeah, they may have to do the landscaping just to get, you know, get it in the running or get it into the market pool. But generally speaking, landscaping doesn't add a ton of value when you're looking at adjusting on the CMA. Okay, so the key thing with selecting your comparables is to think like an appraiser and to think like a buyer's agent. And if you can think like that, then you'll be able to select the right comparables, and then you'll be able to adjust the right factors to get a good list price or to make sure that the listing agent is not overpricing their home because of this crazy market. So hopefully this was helpful tonight, you guys. Wish you the very best of luck. We are kind of transitioning now into the fall market. This is the time to really get out there and to get some sellers to get their homes on the market before it gets into winter. I mean, we're already looking at closing dates of the end of September and early October now. So don't have them miss the opportunity to get their home on the market and listed when it's still very hot. We still have a 1 month supply of inventory or less in the entire area of Puget Sound. So this is the time to get going and start talking with your sellers about price and condition and see if you can push people into getting their home on the market sooner rather than later. With that, I'll let you guys go and have a wonderful week.